So we're going to start this week with a lovely Wii review.
Lovely Wii review.
So this one says, it's 5 stars, which is great. It says, very many enjoyment gained from this. I really like science and listen to this podcast for science that's not so boring like it is in school. It's always explained really simply, and even when I don't learn anything, it's entertaining. I also thoroughly enjoy Luke's takes on, ironically, this being a science pod, how science is bad often.
Yes! My contribution!
It always comes back to that.
My
science
legacy!
Luke Cutfurth, 2020. Shall we start the show?
No, because science is bad. Don't start the show.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories of the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth, and this week, special guest Bliss!
Bliss! Hey. Bliss is here!
How you doing, Bliss?
Good, thank you. Do I look at this camera and say hello?
You can look at whatever camera you want to, Bliss, actually.
You can just look at me.
But that one is preferable.
Yeah. Yes, you've actually already missed your hello cue.
Oh, no.
This week, we're talking about pregnancy, pills, and Puerto Rico.
Oh. How many times did you practice that pronunciation?
I can't actually say Puerto Rico without saying
Puerto Rico.
It may not be correct, but I can't stop doing it. It's so much fun. Just try saying Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
No, it sounds wrong.
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico.
You always sounded northern, James.
Thank you. So, it's my roots.
Do you guys have any idea what I'm on about? With that.
Is it the invention of the pregnancy pill and then testing of the pregnancy pill and horrible catastrophes that ensued?
You got all that from that?
Oh, wow, look.
Did that ruin the whole show?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah! He's back.
No, so, yes, we're going to be talking about the invention of the pregnancy pill, which most people don't tend to know, despite the fact that about 50% of the population may take it at some point in their lives. So, yeah, it's got a pretty shady history. Shall we dive on in?
Yes,
we shall. That was a rhetorical question. So I'll tell you guys about how the pill works first. Have you guys got any idea how it might work?
You put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
And then you swallow it.
Uh-huh.
And then no baby.
What you're saying is you put it in your mouth, you swallow it, and then nothing happens.
Nothing happens, yeah.
Nothing happens.
As opposed to something.
Something, yeah.
That something being a human life?
No, just conception.
Ah, okay.
Life doesn't begin at
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Bliss, please explain what you know about this pill for us men.
I believe that it's possibly, I don't know how, but I think it might trigger a certain part of the menstrual cycle.
Kind of, yeah.
The one where, maybe it makes your body already think that you're pregnant. So then it doesn't need to release any more eggs. I almost was about to ask you, are they called eggs?
They are called eggs. Yeah, so... No, that is pretty much right. So the pill is, what is it? It's taken orally. It's about 99% effective to stop pregnancy, which means only 1 in 100 people that take the pill will get pregnant within a year while on the pill, which is higher than you'd expect, but also not very high. It's quite good.
Lower than if you weren't taking it, yeah.
So the pill, how does it work? It's basically a mix of estrogen and progesterone. And that kind of stimulates the body to, it thickens the mucus in the womb, so it makes it harder for sperm to get to the egg in the first place. And it also thins the lining of the womb, so the fertilized egg, if it does get fertilized, it can't attach to the lining of the womb, which is where pregnancy sort of starts.
Right. Oh, so technically an egg can still be fertilized
whilst
you're taking the pill. But interesting. I didn't know that.
So if you believe that life begins at conception, you probably want to avoid taking the pill. Maybe. Oh, I'm not going to say that. Don't avoid taking the pill. Take the pill.
If you need it.
But
not so, if you don't need it.
So you actually get potentially plenty of conception whilst on the pill. It's just that the baby falls out. before it turns into
much conception.
There's no baby. There is no baby.
Okay, sorry. The fertilized gametes.
The zygote.
Yes.
Oh.
So the usually what happens is a little sperm finds an egg and it goes into it, makes a little zygote, and that then attaches to the wall of the uterus and starts growing into what we would call a baby. But in this case, obviously, it doesn't attach to the lining of the womb, so it just leaves. Goodbye.
Wow. Bye bye.
Bye bye, baby.
Bye bye.
Bye bye, baby. Don't you cry.
Uh-oh. So, Bliss, is this an interesting question?
You can't cry. You don't have tear ducts yet. Sorry. I just wanted to go one step further.
Yeah, one step too far. Bliss, have you ever do you know the sort of cycle of taking the pill? Have you ever taken it?
So, first of all, are they two different things, the morning after pill and the one that you take more regularly than that?
Yeah, so the morning after pill, basically, if you are, I don't know how the morning after pill works off the top of my head, but it is slight, I think it is slightly different than the standard pill.
Yes.
So I think the morning after pill is basically just to get you, if you have basically become pregnant, is just to flush that out. Whereas this kind of makes it difficult for your body to get pregnant in the first place.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I have, most of my friends take it. I don't, but from what I can remember, they take it 3 weeks and then take a break for a week, have their period and then start taking it again. But
do you know why that is?
No.
Okay. Neither do I, Bliss. Don't worry. I don't have to take it though.
No, we'll get into it later. But yeah, no, there's there is a decent reason. Well, I say there's a decent reason. There is a reasoning why that started taking some time off. But yeah, do you know why people might take the pill? Anyone?
Good skin.
What, to get good skin or because they have good skin?
To get good skin.
Yeah.
To get rid of the good skin.
Yeah. My skin is too good. No one will take me seriously.
I actually know someone who was bullied at school for having too good skin.
That person is laughing now.
Wow.
That's
really?
A real... Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's just
jealousy. I don't think that's real.
Yeah, I guess jealousy. Like, I mean, people get bullied for being intelligent, don't they? So,
okay, yeah, that's true.
As long as bullying doesn't make sense.
No, bullying doesn't make sense. But like, if someone's got good skin, what you... look at you, goody good skin. Look at you.
Yeah, look at you and your fantastic skin.
Oh, no spots on that face, eh?
But it's like being bullied. Like, people get bullied for being rich. People get bullied for being intelligent. Like you do get bullied for those things as well.
No, you can definitely get bullied for anything. I'm just curious as to what you could say to bully someone with nice skin.
Here comes all good skin.
Again, I can't think of anything negative when good skin itself has the word good in it, you know?
That's true. That's very true.
Like, oh, look at you. You're such a good guy. It's very difficult to turn that into something not positive.
Goody two shoes.
Yeah, I suppose. Goody two shoes. Yeah.
Your shoes are too nice.
And you got two of them.
I got one bad shoe.
I've got one really bad shoe. How it's meant to be.
And go to your parents. Mom, Dad, please. I just want one bad shoe.
Why did you buy me two shoes?
Mashing your shoe against the road.
This is an episode about the pill. So I will ask you guys once again. Do you know why people might want to take the pill?
Regulate their periods.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anything else?
Not get pregnant.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah. I thought you guys would start with that one, to be perfectly honest.
From what we said, it was kind of implied.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, you just want to be very, very upfront with it.
Thorough.
Yeah, you can absolutely take it. So you could take it to stop pregnancy. You can take it to, if you've got heavy or painful periods, or PMS or endometriosis, it can help for all of that. But there are obviously some side effects. Do you guys know what the side effects might be?
Depression.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, did you not know that?
Yeah.
What's funny is that I went, because I'd struggled to get treatment for depression. Is that fine to say? Is that fine to share?
That's fine. You can share what happened.
We talk about this all the time. No, you worry.
Okay, great. So I'd been on antidepressants and they hadn't really helped. And I'd found that, my PMS was really bad. So I got, I did get prescribed a pill. But then I worried that then it would just make my depression worse, which I've heard that it can, so no, I never can, did.
Yeah, yeah. That's totally fair enough. And that's the thing. Some medical, I think the sort of medical world is really only starting to take depression as a symptom of the pill quite seriously now. It's something that's kind of been ignored for quite a while. So the pill, I mean, the pill's not been around for that long, probably about 60, 70 years-ish, that thereabouts. It's kind of started right then. So it's not been around for too long, but long enough that we probably should have been paying attention to the
maybe the
serious side effects of it. Yeah. So yeah, you've got mood swings, nausea, breast tenderness, and headaches, and also depression is one of the potential side effects. There's also no evidence. Some people say that the pill will make you gain weight, but this is from the NHS. There is apparently no evidence of that. There are some people that can't use it. So if you're, say, over 35, you smoke, if you have certain medical conditions, you can't use you probably shouldn't be using the pill. And obviously, it doesn't protect against STDs. Some people, this is the thing, if you don't have sex education, some people think, oh yeah, contraceptive, it's going to protect me, just like condoms are. Pill's not protecting you from anything except for, that's the only STD it's stopping is children.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sexually transmitted daughter.
Oh, gosh.
STS and STD.
Oh, no.
Oh, boys.
I didn't think it stopped STDs.
No.
Daughters, yes, but.
But the thing is, it doesn't necessarily stop asexually transmitted daughters, which aren't a thing in humans, but are in, you know, other animals like turkeys. We've spoken about that before. Actually, I don't know. No, do you know what? It would stop. It does stop non-sexually transmitted daughters as well. As in, you know, we spoke about parthenogenesis, right?
That's what the Virgin Mary needed, really.
Well, no, because it wouldn't... Oh, no, because she had Jesus. That was...
True.
That's wouldn't categorically have, it wouldn't affect him. And that's why the Catholics are against birth control.
He would turn it into baby food on the way down.
And the angel Gabriel did come down and take away her microgynon.
He just swapped them out for Tic Tacs. Which is a horrible thing. Don't do that. No. Bad. Bad.
I think you can tell the difference between a contraceptive pill and Tic Tacs, Corey.
I can.
Nice of you to make it taste like mint. Never.
I've said the pill isn't suitable for you in some cases. And yeah, the NHS says there might be a link between the pill and depression, but evidence is mixed and further evidence is needed. So, like I said, scientists are just starting to look at the fact that the pill might be linked to depression. It is something that has been kind of reported, but there's no cold, hard facts on it. But again, that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It just means we've not studied it properly yet.
Sorry, do you know anything about over 35, the fact you can't take it? Because I never knew that.
I do know. And I will tell you that about now. So basically it just says it might not be right for you if you're like a number of different things. For one thing, it says if you're pregnant, if you're over 35, smoking, all those reasons. And basically because it might mess with your body a little bit because they are hormones. So there is a little bit of estrogen in it and there is a lot of progesterone. It increases the risks, of side effects or more serious side effects are increased if you fall into any of those groups. So it doesn't say that you, it doesn't say that you straight up can't use it if you're 35 or over. It just says you probably should speak to your doctor. Mm-hmm. Whereas if someone's under 35, they're more likely to be fine. Mm.
Can I ask a question?
You've already asked one.
Oh, okay.
That's it. That's the question.
And that was it.
Yes.
So we all know, well, we covered estrogen in other topics and on this podcast, estrogen being the hormone that's more prevalent in biological females than biological males, but present in both in some amounts. But what is progesterone? What does that do?
So progesterone is just a hormone that's involved in sort of pregnancy, the menstrual cycle, generally found in higher concentrations in people born female.
And I guess people born female who are pregnant, it's in higher concentrations than people born female who are not pregnant.
I think so. I'm not sure necessarily. Okay. The thing is that pregnancy is complicated and there are lots of hormones, and I'm going to be honest, Luke, I don't know them all.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, no, because basically in the research that I've done today, I actually, surprisingly enough, managed to avoid pregnancy because this is a pill about no pregnancy. we'll likely do an episode on pregnancy at some point, but I don't want to outright say that their progesterone is higher in people that are pregnant.
Okay.
Currently. Yeah. So I don't know, basically. So yeah, the pill might not be right for you if you smoke and you're over 35 or over. So I did say it was 35 or over. It's if you smoke and you're 35 or over, or if you stopped smoking less than a year ago and you're 35 or
okay.
over. So being 35 or over alone doesn't mean that you shouldn't have the pill. It just means if you smoke, you should probably be more cautious. Also, if you're overweight, if you take certain medicines, if you've got a blood clot, if you've had a stroke, or if anyone in your family's had a blood clot under the age of 45, if you've had breast cancer, gallbladder or liver disease, or diabetes or migraines. Lots of reasons you might not have. Like, if you've got any of those things, you might want to avoid the pill. But there are other sort of options as well. But yeah, that's who should and shouldn't be taking the pill. So there are some advantages to it and some disadvantages. One advantage, it doesn't interrupt sex, so you can keep on having sex as much as you want, basically.
No interruptions is preferable.
Yeah, it can make your periods lighter or more regular. Like I said, reduce PMS symptoms, reduce acne, give you clearer skin look.
Hell yeah.
Reduce your risk of certain cancers, and so, potentially reduce your risks of certain sort of cysts in your ovaries, which
wow.
is yeah. So
oh wow.
So there, yeah, so there are more sort of benefits to it than just no kids. But but there are also some disadvantages. So you can have, like I said, some side effects, headaches, nausea, all of those sort of things. But also it can increase your blood pressure. It doesn't protect you from STIs like condoms would. And you can have spotting, which is common in the first few months. And also, like I've said, it can increase your risk of blood clots and breast cancer potentially.
Mm. Spotting being like bits of period throughout the month.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
I also believe so.
Yes. Never having had a period. Never having had a period. I can't be 100% sure, but I'd assume so, yeah. No,
that, neither confirm nor deny.
Just, I think it's literally, quite literally, spotting.
Literal spots.
Little bits of spots.
Yeah. Little bits of spots. Yeah.
Okay. But not spots on your face.
No.
No.
Spots on your pants.
Yeah. Spots, one place, but not another. It switches the place of the spots, maybe.
It takes the spots from your face.
And puts them on your pants.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it can slightly increase your risk of certain cancers, breast cancer and cervical cancer. But it can decrease uterine cancer, and ovarian and bowel cancer. So kind of levels out, but also 10 years after taking it, your cancer risk goes back to normal. So it's not a lifelong effect.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's kind of an overview on the pill. You got a decent idea of what the pill does? You take you take it about 3 weeks of the month, take a break, have a quick period, get back on it.
quick period.
Just to get it out of the
way. That's what it felt like.
Pop a quick one out. Pop back on the pill.
Quick period out.
No, so that's the pill. And to be honest, a lot of people do take the pill because it is a fairly decent option, and you can kind of control your life in a way that suits you. If you want to be having sex and not having to worry about pregnancy all the time, or if you want to be having sex without a condom, which not recommended, you can if you want and not worry about pregnancy. So it gives you more options. It can also alleviate some conditions and make periods more manageable. So there are more benefits to it than just not popping out a child every now and then. So we know what the pill is, but how did it begin? Where did it come from?
Where did it go?
Where did it come from?
Cotton Eye Joe.
Oh.
Famous inventor of the pill, Cotton Eye Joe.
Apparently, Cotton Eye Joe is about an STD or an STI.
Oh,
rather.
Is he actually?
Yeah, supposedly. I don't. This might be one of those things that someone just said, and it just sounds right. Like
and it's
a myth.
Just become
a
myth.
God,
yeah.
I'm getting images now.
But you think Cotton Eye Joe? That.
Oh,
you know what that's referring to?
Yeah, you know what that. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?
Does that mean it's an STD that comes and then is there for a bit and then vanishes?
No, no, no. Where did you come from and where did you go? Like. Who did I get it from? And
like, where
I
have you been?
Hmm?
Where did you go?
If it hadn't been for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd have been married a long time ago.
Oh my gosh, it makes perfect sense.
Look, if it's not about it, it does fit very well.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Oh. Not very pleasant. Shall we get onto the pill?
Yes.
Well, all of us now.
No. Well, we came off the pill, now we're going back on.
Well, we shouldn't be on the pill.
Okay.
It's not good. It's not necessarily good for us. We don't want progesterone.
No.
No. No?
No.
No. Okay. I'm going to say off it. You guys do what you want. But back onto the pill. Have you guys ever heard of a woman called Margaret Sanger?
No.
Yes.
You have?
Yes. I think we spoke about her recently because she discovered the contraceptive pill, did she not? She discovered how to make a contraceptive pill.
No? Oh, wait, when did we talk about
it? Last week.
Did we?
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all. No, she didn't necessarily discover the contraceptive pill. She was a very strong advocate and activist for women's rights. And she did set up some of the first what they called non-pregnancy clinics.
Planned pregnancy.
Sort of Planned Parenthood, sort of birth control clinics. Mm. She set up one of the first ones of those in New York, in Brooklyn. So that was in 1916, but obviously it was illegal then, and they were only selling sort of condoms and these things called pessaries, which are kind of like rubber caps that were supposed to be used to help the structure of the womb, but in fact operated as contraceptives as well. So she was selling those and condoms. They got shut down after about 10 days.
Were condoms illegal?
Contraceptives were illegal. Birth control was illegal.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, no, it's more that I'm not sure whether condoms themselves were illegal, but birth control was illegal in much of the US. Women didn't have contraceptive rights, and that's what she was campaigning for a lot. So she basically thought that women, if they wanted to be fully free and have like the same rights as men, they should have the right to control whether or not they got pregnant, which at that point they didn't. And we live in a world now where generally women can decide what they want to do with their bodies.
Mm.
Here and there, there are some things that we've not quite ironed out yet. But we live in a world where, women mostly have autonomy over their own bodies. And back then, not that long ago, this was maybe like in about 100 years ago or so, they just didn't, there were laws against contraceptives.
Wow.
Which is just horrifying.
That's insane. I never knew condoms were outlawed.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure if condoms themselves were outlawed because obviously they protect from STDs, STIs.
Yeah.
But the birth control.
Using it as birth control.
So birth control was outlawed. So you'd assume that condoms were as well.
And condoms have a much longer history than the invention of the condom that we know. They used to use like pig's bladders or something as condoms.
They would use animal skins and things like that. I mean, we found ancient condoms, which I love that.
Ancient condoms.
Well, this is the thing. People seem to think that the ancient civilizations were very, very different from us. Completely different sort of personalities. Mm. They couldn't have fun. They couldn't make jokes. But if you go around Roman cities, you'll see people writing in walls like "Sex just was here." So things like that. And of course, they're going to make condoms because of course they're going to want to have sex without having to have kids. Like, you know, it's just sort of human nature. Yeah, really.
Right. I was going to say, they're only human.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a much longer history than you'd expect. So Margaret Sanger sounds like a great woman, right? What do you guys think?
Too close to Margaret Thatcher for me.
Yeah, so you're not so hot on her, you guys? What do you think?
Yeah.
Well, if
surely.
She was trying to help people and was breaking the law that was a backwards law to do so, that sounds pretty progressive. So are you going to tell me that she wasn't so great in some way?
She was a eugenicist.
Oh, I had a feeling.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. What I walked you guys mean? Right into a trap. So don't worry. I'll explain.
Okay, thank you.
Basically, she had these really strong views on birth control. She thought that, she thought that women should be allowed to control their own bodies. But also in there was the idea that birth control would be really good because it would stop poor and, undesirable people from producing offspring. So eugenics, you might know from an earlier episode of our podcast, is this backward pseudoscientific idea that we should sort of control the breeding of certain populations that have undesirable characteristics such that we can breed a superpopulation with only desirable characteristics. On the face of it, if you describe it badly, it can sound like it's not as harmful as it is. I definitely recommend listening to our eugenics episode because it's just awful. It doesn't really work at all.
It's called eugenics. It's 20-something.
Yeah. It's called eugenics. It's 20-something.
It's 20-something years old. No. It's episode 20-something.
Exactly. She was a bit of a eugenicist. She said that basically the undesirable group for her were the mentally and physically defective.
That sounds like Hitler.
And she, this is the thing. Hitler took a lot of his, the Nazis took a lot of their ideas from, that sounds bad. They took a lot of their ideas from the American eugenicist movement, which Americans seem to just I say Americans, the entire world seems to ignore it. As we've spoken about, Winston Churchill was a member of the Eugenics Society or the Eugenics Party, something along those lines. I think he was possibly the chairman. And yeah, the Nazis took a lot of what they wanted to do from America, including Jim Crow laws. They thought those were a bit harsh. They couldn't, they didn't think they would work in the way that they wanted to use them. But the whole eugenics thing, yeah, the Nazis weren't the ones that came up with that. America had it first. They've always been a world leader, that America, haven't they? No, Britain has been bad for it too. Britain was bad for it too. But no, really. So the undesirable group the groups that she considered undesirable, as I say, were the mentally and physically defective. And she would argue that birth control could help wipe out the greatest present menace to civilization, which was people that were living in poverty and those with mental and physical disabilities. Wow. Yeah,
bit cringe.
Yeah, like don't do that. So that's the birth of the, I guess, birth control pill. Yeah, the birth of the birth control.
The birth control pill.
Yeah. It was rooted a little bit in eugenics. Obviously, the pill itself is not bad, but it was thought up as a tool for eugenicists, which is a bit iffy. But yeah, so Sanger was the one that was really, really pushing for it. She wanted there to be a pill that you could take orally, which is by your mouth, and you could give to basically anyone. She was a little bit racist in the way that she said it, I think. I'm going to paraphrase what she said. You could take it anywhere from sort of New York to, I think she said, the slums of Peru or something along those lines. Again... a bit cringe. Posting cringe in the chat, lads. Let's not. really, though, like this is some bad. Like some of the stuff she said was quite bad, and even bad for the era. So yeah, the idea was to basically get a pill that anyone could have that didn't want to be pregnant, and they could just take it and not have to be pregnant. It wouldn't intrude on their lives. It wouldn't it wouldn't be too difficult to take, and it'd be fairly cheap. That was the goal.
So did she? Did she come up with the idea before it was a thing that existed?
Yeah.
So she sort of conceptualized of the oral pill before it existed.
Yeah. So she wanted something that covered all those bases, and she didn't want it to be something that had to be injected. So yeah, she basically came up with the idea of the oral pill. She wasn't a scientist, mind. She was just a sort of activist, but she knew how to get stuff done. So she found a man named Gregory Pincus, who was a researcher. So he'd worked with Harvard. He'd been educated at Harvard. He studied mammals, and specifically sort of mammal reproduction. So I think around about the in the 20s or 30s, he was researching the eggs of mammals, and eggs of mammals being the egg cells, not like platypuses, by the way.
Yeah,
I just want to be clear on that. it wasn't those. Yeah, so he was studying a lot. So he did quite a fair amount. He had fertilized rabbit eggs in a test tube and implanted them back into rabbits, and then got the rabbits and basically allowed the rabbits to be born. So IVF of rabbits, effectively. He did that in the 30s. He also supposedly got a sort of parthenogenic effect. Remember, we were talking about that earlier, parthenogenesis being... the sort of fertilization, well, the creation of a creature without fertilization, basically. So basically, he used an egg to make a rabbit just by kind of changing around what was going on the outside of the egg, and made a rabbit from an unfertilized egg. And that was in the 1936. So even at the time, that was quite frowned upon. And even now, you'll see that it's still a bit of a touchy subject. But back then, people weren't too happy with it. They thought it was a bit of a scary sort of thing for people to be doing. So he was kind of shunned a little bit from Harvard, to the point where he went with a friend, and they set up their own sort of laboratory, which is kind of unheard of at the time. So Pincus was well known for his work with mammalian pregnancy, and Margaret went to him to basically say, hey, I have an idea and I want to get it done. You seem like the man to get it done. And so that was it. That was kind of the start of the pill. He started working on that. Obviously, there were some issues. He did know that injecting rabbits with progesterone would stop them from ovulating. So he was aware of that. But it was a case of finding a way to make this injection, well, one, safe for humans, and two, being able to able to be taken orally. And obviously they needed money to bankroll that. So in comes, this feels like, by the way, sorry, this feels like, you know, Ocean's 11 or something, where you're assembling a crew.
They all have a unique skill.
They do. They all, like, we've got the science guy, we've got the idea man, and in comes the bankroller. We've got Catherine McCormick. She is a very, very wealthy woman, as you would assume. Her husband died and left her millions. She was one of the wealthiest women in the world. And she just wanted to spend some of her money. So what she was doing was she was basically giving her money to these people to work on this pill, because it was something that she was quite sort of passionate about. And I'm pretty sure she was also one of the first women to graduate with a degree in science from MIT.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool. So she was bankrolling that. That's kind of where the money came from. So you've got the person that came up with the idea, you've got the person that was able to do the science, and then you had the money. So at that point, what they needed to do was figure out how to get the progesterone to work as a contraceptive. They knew that it would work in rabbits, so they continued those rabbit tests from years previously. So Pincus started working with a man named Chang, who worked with him in his the lab that I mentioned that he set up. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what he did there. He started working with Chang. They started working on rabbits, and then they moved to rats, and they used larger doses for longer lasting effects. So basically the idea obviously is to have a constant contraceptive that stops you from ovulating basically the entire time. That's what they were working on. When they moved on to rats, the experiment worked to the point where there weren't any pregnant rats in the study. So they knew that it worked. The next step was effectively to try and get it to work on human women.
This is where it all went wrong.
Yeah.
Oh.
No. Well, no, not necessarily. Look, this is the thing. And I say human women, by the way, because at this point, bear in mind, they were really only doing it on women. They had an issue, obviously. You could inject the progesterone, but you couldn't take it orally. It wouldn't work quite as well. Lucky for them, in the 50s, which is quite some time later, but in the 50s, someone would discover, or rather sort of produce, a synthetic progesterone, which is called progestin, which is 4 to 8 times more potent than normal progesterone. And also, you were able to digest it. So it would be able to survive your stomach and not get completely digested. So you could take it orally. So when the time got to that being discovered, they would be able to use that. They continued their studies. And Pincus had gotten to the point where he realized that, this is all working in women. We just need to find someone to let us study on actual people. So he knew that he needed a doctor. In comes the doctor, John Rock. Which, again, I think he is the last character to join our story.
It sounds like a character as well, the name. John Rock.
You got John Rock, Gregory Pincus, I don't know the rest of the names.
Wow.
Catherine McCormick, and Margaret Sanger. It's a pretty good
group. All sound like comic book characters.
Yeah, they do. Mm. They'd be a good group if, you know, one of them wasn't a eugenicist.
Yes. The one flaw.
Everyone has a flaw, man. You know? One fatal
Most
flaw.
Most of us aren't eugenicists.
Yeah.
All of us.
I had to think
Most
about
of us. Which one of us? One of Bliss. You would betray me. Bliss.
It's not me.
I knew there was another reason we brought you. It's Margaret.
So Gregory Pincus had to start the trials with John Rock, and that's what they did. Although, to get this past, you know, the government, and past all the laws, because there were laws against contraceptives, Pincus described it as a fertility treatment rather than saying it was. Yeah, I know. But apparently there was a slightly increased fertility after you finished the pill. Apparently you're slightly more fertile than previously for a short period. That's kind of how they did that. That's how they got around the laws, because they were doing this in Massachusetts and it was very illegal there. So they basically lied and didn't really tell people what they were actually doing in the study, which is the kind of first start of this shady sort of not really informing people of what they're getting themselves into. Bear in mind, these women that were being given these pills had no idea what they were being given, really. They just thought they were being given something that would at some point increase their fertility. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so Rock started giving it to his patients. He gave it to his patients without any sort of consent. He didn't let them know that they were taking place in a taking part in a trial. Yeah, and bear in mind, in the 50s, this wasn't illegal.
Right.
I think, yeah, remember, we've spoken about a number of different studies that happened around this time period. They just don't need to tell you that they didn't need to tell you that they were putting you in a trial or in a study, which is such an issue, I think. Anyway, they continued working on women without their consent, really. And they had an issue with the women that Rock was working with, in that a lot of them thought that they were pregnant. They had sort of symptoms of pregnancy. They genuinely thought that when they were on the pill, that they were pregnant, no matter how much he told them that it wouldn't be possible for them to be pregnant. And they often got quite upset when they found out that they weren't pregnant. Now, this is the thing. This is where this week off initially came from.
Mm.
Pincus thought, you know what? If they all think that they're pregnant because they're missing their period and there's other sort of symptoms, why don't we just give them their period? So he basically suggested taking 7 days off of the pill, 5 to 7 days off the pill.
Oh.
And then starting a course again. And that way they would have their period and they would know that they weren't going to be pregnant and they would still menstruate, basically. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And wait, so he did that to prove to them that they weren't pregnant so that they continue taking the drug he wanted them to take?
Kind of, yeah. Basically, well, it wasn't so much that they didn't want to continue taking it. It could just be quite obviously traumatic if you think you're pregnant and then you're told that you're not pregnant. So, yeah, it was basically 5 days off of the pills of the month, and you would have your period and you would not be ovulating, but you would know that you still were menstruating, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, all of that happened. And like I said, in the 50s, there weren't any laws in place to stop them from just doing tests on patients without telling them they were taking part in a study. And in 1953, they studied 27 of Rock's patients at the Free Hospital for a 3-month trial. Basically, the women there were still infertile. The women there were infertile. And actually, the previous studies that they'd done with women, some of them had also been infertile. Mm. So they were basically just giving them these drugs because Rock initially worked with people trying to increase their fertility, and they wanted to make sure that it was safe for women. So they started on infertile women.
Right. Yeah. So there's a logic to that, which is that you're not going to, if somebody's infertile, you're not going to worsen their chances of getting pregnant. You're just testing for any other side effects. I'm not saying it's good. I just mean, I'm just checking, is that the logic?
Yeah, they're basically,
want to make perfectly fertile women infertile.
Right.
Yeah. So there were a few things going on there. You don't want to potentially permanently affect the fertility of these women. Additionally, you can't then, if you know that you're not affecting pregnancy down the line. You're basically just testing to see if it's safe for these women to take the pill.
Yeah.
And that's why it was particularly troubling for them mm-hmm. when they found out they weren't pregnant, because they were still infertile.
Right.
Yeah. So they would still get their periods, obviously. So they figured that out. They figured out after working on those infertile women that you could give it to women and they're generally fine. It can mimic some feelings of pregnancy, you know, the nausea and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the side effects weren't too much for the men that were doing the study. I say that specifically because there were quite a serious number of side effects, but the men were like, oh, they're fine.
Yeah, it was acceptable.
Right. Yeah, they thought it was acceptable.
Right.
But they didn't ask the women necessarily.
Well, the women weren't too happy with the side effects, but
the men were like, deal with it.
Yeah, deal with it, basically.
Doesn't look too bad.
Basically. Right.
Yeah. Oh, this is not a good story. These are not good people. So yeah, they were doing a 3-month trial with 27 of Rock's patients from the free hospital, and apparently it was nicknamed the Pinkest Progesterone Project, or PPP, because they had to do so many urine samples. The women that were in the study were being asked to do vaginal smears on themselves. I think daily they had to take the pill daily, apart from 5 days of the month. They also needed to take a given number of urine samples, so it was very intensive, and it was just very difficult for them to do it. Supposedly, they weren't really told what they were doing, and most of them were just doing it because Rock said that they should, and they trusted Rock as their doctor. And they just continued doing studies like these where they weren't really telling the women involved what was going on. They were kind of ignoring the side effects that were happening, and they were just like powering through them.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the through line of this, that they don't really give the people the information that they need to actually consent to these trials, and they kind of ignore the potential side effects of it.
Some potential positive here. Did any of the women, because you say after you stop taking the pill, your fertility slightly increases. Did any of the women who were infertile become fertile?
Not as far as I'm aware, no.
Oh.
No.
I was really holding on there.
And then in the first year of another set of trials, they enrolled 60 women. Then half of them dropped out because the testing was too demanding, with the vaginal smears and whatnot.
Mm.
Or because the side effects were too much. So they had people dropping out because they were testing them too rigorously, and also because the side effects were just, they didn't want them. And bear in mind, I think it was Pincus that said something along these lines, that because they were healthy women, that was the issue. You know, if you've got sick patients, you can get them to do whatever you want, because you're saying, hey, you might get better. But if it's a healthy woman that just doesn't want to get pregnant, there's not really much incentive for her to continue like with awful side effects.
Mm. Oh, I think I thought he was telling them that he could increase their fertility.
That was what they did initially.
Okay.
And then moving on to different tests, they started using basically different women for it. So there were lots of different tests. Bear in mind, this is not one trial. Yeah. There were lots and lots of different trials. And the thing is, in this last trial that I'm talking about, the one with where they had 60 women, about 15% of the women showed signs of ovulation while on the progesterone, which were worse results than they'd seen with the rabbits and the rats. So it wasn't working exactly as they wanted to. They needed large-scale trials over a long period of time. So they decided on Puerto Rico because basically it was a poorer area. The women there were less educated, and they could kind of run wild and do what they wanted, which is a bit... Yeah, it's not very good.
I feel like we've heard this story so many times. It's like the same thing.
Oh, marginalized people being exploited? No, we've never heard that story before.
Millions of genetically modified mosquitoes being released in Brazil?
Yeah, do it.
Close enough.
If you're gonna test something, do it on poor people first, because what are they going to do to you?
Out of context, guys.
That genuinely seems to be the prevailing sort of idea with scientists. Just do it to poor people. And then see if it's safe for everyone else. It's awful, but it's what they do.
This seems to be the case, unfortunately.
Yeah. So before they like properly sorted out their Puerto Rico trials, they actually did it in a mental hospital.
Oh my gosh, it just gets worse and worse.
Now, obviously, it being, I think it was called an asylum at that point. They didn't give them. They didn't need to ask their permission for it. They would just give it to them. They also gave it to men as well to see what happened. They were really just testing on whoever they felt like they could get away with. And bear in mind, this is still not necessarily sanctioned under the law, because birth control is illegal. And yes, that law is not a good one. But by lying to people about what they're being tested for, that's still morally wrong. Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing. So they studied it in an asylum without the consent of the people they were studying on, and then they moved on to Puerto Rico. Another good reason for studying in Puerto Rico was the fact that apparently contraception wasn't illegal there, so they could get away with doing it non-illegally, but they could also exploit the people of the place. And that's the thing. It was really awful. I'm just going to kind of condense it all down into a few sentences, because there were lots of different trials with lots of different people. I think they lasted over a year. But effectively, initially, they had people drop out of the trial because some people's husbands had objected to it. Some people were worried about their priests, and others were having side effects. And that's the thing. People throughout this entire thing were having side effects, and they continually just were like, let's just test it on more women. Let's just do it. Mm. So they ended up getting a long-term study where they find out that, yeah, the pill that they'd now sort of formulated worked. It stopped pregnancy. And what they did was they managed to reduce the side effects slightly by adding in a little bit of estrogen. So too much estrogen, you'd get too many side effects. And it wouldn't, I don't think the pill would work quite as well. But with just a little bit of estrogen, you could actually reduce the side effects and still have, you know, contraceptive properties. So they added in a little bit of estrogen, and it worked fairly well. And they had a pill that worked. But these women in Puerto Rico were just exploited. Mm-hmm. Apparently, three people died over the course of the studies, but they weren't autopsied. It wasn't really looked into. It was just a mess, to be honest. In fact, some people were given apparently very clear, simple instructions, but mm-hmm. they were giving pills out to their friends. They were skipping days. They were not taking them as they should be because they weren't really explained properly. It's really just a terrible story of going to a country and exploiting the people there.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. No one was necessarily seriously harmed other than those three women that died that we don't know why they died.
Did they suspect that they died because of the treatment or the instructions or something?
I don't know. There's nothing on that. Mm. Like, literally, this is the thing. There's nothing on it. I can't find anything. There were no autopsies, so it would just be conjecture. But three women died during the course of the studies. They managed to basically prove its efficacy and prove that it worked. So they lowered the dosage slightly because the dosages they were using back then were astronomical compared to the doses that we use nowadays. So they'd managed to work out all the kinks. They'd gotten rid of the side effects, really. They'd made it quite simple to take. You just take it. They'd made it quite simple to take by taking it orally. They'd added in the estrogen. And it was all pretty solid. It just came to sort of getting it, when it came to getting it licensed by the FDA, he lied again and said that it was a fertility treatment. When it went out, it went out as a fertility treatment.
Really?
Yeah.
He tricked the FDA.
Well, it wasn't, I mean, it's not so much tricking the FDA because it does, I'm scratching my back.
It does have a small increase of fertility after you stop taking it.
It does technically work.
That's like taking a pill for depression that makes you really, really depressed for a while. And then when you stop taking it, it makes you not depressed. And you call that a depression treatment.
Yeah, but the thing is that doctors knew about this. This was kind of a thing where, because it was a side effect. Well, no, because one of the side effects was it would stop ovulation, they had to put it on the bottle that it stopped ovulation.
Yeah.
Which basically meant you were able to market it. You weren't technically allowed to market it as birth control, but it said right on the thing,
right.
Birth control effective.
So doctors could like prescribe that and pretend not to know.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Although it was being used under the name, was it Endovol? Envidol? Enovoid. Enovid, that's it. So it was being given under the name Enovid. But this is the thing. Just to test if the sort of side effects were psychosomatic or not, he did some more tests. And he found out that actually quite a lot of the side effects could be psychosomatic. So what he did was he got one group of women, he gave them Enovid, and he told them what it was. He found another group of women, he gave them a placebo, and then he found a third group of women and gave them Enovid and didn't tell them what it was that he was giving them, which is awful. You're not allowed to do that. That's like nowadays that you're basically giving people something and not telling them what it is in order to study
definitely
the side effects.
Not allowed.
No, definitely not allowed. Awful. And yeah, so we find out that apparently the side effects were present in 23% of the people that knew that they were getting Enovid and got it. The side effects were present in 23% of the people that were given Enovid and told what it was. And in 17% of the people that were given a placebo and told it was Enovid. And in 6% of the people that were just given Enovid but not told what it was. So you basically had found out that there were side effects, but there was quite a, psychosomatic sort of sort of element to it.
On that, I wrote this in a book by a reputable doctor, but I then wasn't able to find another source for it. So I take this with a pinch of salt. But apparently, on side effects and on placebo, if you give people who can potentially get pregnant an injection and tell them it would delay their period, and it is a placebo, like a significant amount of those people will then have a delayed period.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that just so weird?
It's amazing how much your mind can influence your body.
Yeah.
Really.
That's so strange.
Yeah. I mean, that's the placebo effect itself is just very interesting. That something can work just because you sort of think it will work. But yeah, as I said, this experiment to test the side effects were just... it was just awful. I mean, he basically didn't tell them what the purpose of the study was, and he didn't tell them what the side effects of the study were. It's just... Sorry, that's the issue. It's just a bit messed up. I should clarify. I said that he gave them Enovid and didn't tell them what it was. Rather, he gave them Enovid and didn't tell them about any of the side effects.
Right.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
Which is slightly better, but not really good at all. If there are side effects, you should know about them. If the side effects are like blood clots and nausea, you should probably be aware of that going in.
Only one thing I was wondering about. The idea, you know, we were talking before about depression and how they're wondering if that's linked. Do you know if that would have been seen as a side effect? Like, since when has depression as a concept been known to doctors, just if that makes sense?
I don't think it would have been seen as a side effect then because, I mean, well, for one thing, I don't think they were taking the pill long enough for it to really be too evident.
Mm-hmm.
Mood swings, they definitely saw.
Okay.
So it probably would have fallen under that.
Yeah.
But yeah. That makes sense. In terms of how long doctors known about and actually classified depression, I'm not really sure how long. Right. Luke, do you have any idea?
So according to the National Institute of Health, the word depression was around in the 19th century. So before this began, but it generally just meant in terms of categorizing low mood, just feeling a little bit sad. But as late as the 1960s and the 1970s, depression was still seen as an episodic disorder, one that had complete remission. Whereas nowadays we would talk about somebody being like potentially like predisposed towards depression, and that's not curable.
Chronically depressed.
You can like bring yourself up and you can and you can treat the symptoms and you can, but it's not a curable disease necessarily. But in the 1970s they were still talking about it being episodic.
Well, that's interesting though, because actually they've really not understood mental health sort of issues for a long period of history. I mean, many of them in some cases they used to think that they were character flaws.
You know? I was reading this week about how DID, which we've done a whole episode on, was for a very long time just considered people pretending.
Yeah.
Like pretending to have multiple personalities.
Although, some people do pretend to have multiple personalities.
I'm sure they do.
Some people do. Everyone is.
Have you seen that thing on TikTok recently of the white girl saying that she can say the N-word, but she won't because she says one of her personalities is black?
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the thing is, if that was the case, perfectly understandable, but it's the fact that she says, "Hold on, I'll bring her out." Goes like this: "Yo, what's up, guys? It's me."
Oh my god!
Yeah, many people with the idea have come out and said that video seems very, very manufactured.
One of my alters is a racial stereotype, but to prove the fact that people who have DID actually have DID and aren't acting, what they did was they got actors to pretend to have multiple personalities and stuck them in an MRI machine, and then brain scanned people pretending to have multiple personalities, and then brain scanned people who say they actually have multiple personalities or alters, and they show totally different patterns, and that's how they showed that it's a real thing. But it was thought to be fake for a very long time.
We covered that in our episode, didn't we? And one of the sort of really interesting things is that the alters can have completely different personalities, but also completely different
symptoms.
Symptoms and memories and talents and skills.
Different
languages.
Eye color was also something that changed.
I don't think so.
No,
that would be freaky.
That would be freaky.
I might have read that somewhere, not the podcast. I just assumed it was facts.
I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna say right now that's not possible.
I've heard that. Don't know how possible it is.
Obviously, nothing is necessarily impossible, but that is not possible. Yeah.
Mm. Never say never. I'm saying never this time.
I'm gonna say never this time. Yeah, but no, we got a little bit off track there, but yeah, so I don't think depression was one of the side effects that they initially would have listed, but bearing in mind this is a classic case of men not really caring about the side effects that women have, because they basically, their idea was these side effects are fine given that you can have sex without having a kid, like they make sense. Like, it's not too much of a price to pay. Obviously, if women were working on that study, or just people that menstruate were working on that study, maybe it might have been different and they might have focused a little bit harder on removing the side effects. But that's kind of the way that science works, is when it's dominated by one sort of group of people.
Mm. I thought it was interesting because it's not quite obviously related to the pill, but more PMS. I downloaded a period tracking app so that I could... if I was feeling particularly low, or like I was having like particularly severe kind of side effects from depression, I guess, I check the app and sometimes it'll say, oh, you have higher, and it does sometimes say you have higher levels of progesterone at this time of the month.
Oh, wow.
So you might be feeling more lethargic, and it's just a little something to, oh, okay, you know, you blame yourself a little bit less. Like, there's some hormonal things going on.
There's actually something to this.
There's a reason for this.
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
That's the thing. Hormones could absolutely affect your mood. And I say hormones can absolutely affect your mood. They do affect your mood.
They kind of are your mood in a way.
A lot of your mood.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Some people will say, well, no one changes at all due to hormones. Like, you know, that doesn't affect your mood. But it can, and it does. That's not a reason to sort of undermine women or people that menstruate.
Or
say that they can't control themselves. That's just not the case. There was something that I've been trying to look into, that it's very difficult to find any studies on it, is male hormones and how they fluctuate, because it doesn't make sense to me that male hormones would be constant all the time. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think there was some, I don't have a source for this, but I think I read something about men or males synchronizing up in some ways when they're around, in the same way that females can sync up menstrual cycles.
They don't do it.
Really?
Supposedly syncing up isn't really a thing, but
that's so prevalent as an idea.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's very difficult. Yeah. With topics like this, it's very difficult to find good sources on it. And everyone believes that people sync up. I've read places that they don't. I've also read places that say they do. But when it came to looking for sort of male hormone patterns, very little, very few studies on it. In fact, it got to the point where my search terms had to be so specific and I had to remove so many other things that were coming up. And I find maybe one or two decent articles that said, maybe there's a little bit. Don't know. That's it. So maybe, you know, maybe for a Sci Guys Live episode every second Sunday, I'll do one of those. But it's just really difficult to find that kind of information.
What are you thinking? Because obviously, if females' hormones are affected by their menstrual cycle, and that's the changes, what would you be thinking that would affect men's? I guess men's hormones.
The thing is that my kind of line of thinking is the fact that nothing in the body is really constant all the time. Do you know what I mean? It's there is kind of an equilibrium. So let's look at insulin production. Your body does not have a constant level of insulin all the time. Mm. Your body produces more insulin when it needs more and less when it needs less. And you know, there is a little bit of fluctuation there. So it would make sense that there is also fluctuation in other hormones. I wouldn't expect it to be nearly as strong as the hormone fluctuation that happens around menstruation, but you would expect to see some kind of fluctuation. I just thought it might be interesting to look at.
Well, I guess that the only counterpoint I can think of to that is that insulin production is It's reactive to external stimuli, whereas you're talking about the potential for a time-based cycle of hormones in a male body.
But then there are also time-based cycles for sleep, and hormone production changes during sleep. It changes during exercise. There are so many different factors. This is the thing. There are so many different factors that it's very difficult to have a concrete answer unless you were to find studies. So any conjecture that I may come up with, it would be ignoring all of the things that I don't know.
Yeah.
And there are so many unknowns in this because I don't understand the human body. There's too much going on. Less should happen in the body. That's my take. I think
really inefficient.
Less of it, if you ask me. But no, the reason that I say this is just to point out that the fact is that the medical field and the scientific fields are overwhelmingly dominated by men, particularly cis, white, probably heterosexual men. And you see that bias everywhere. Well, I say you see that everywhere. You don't necessarily see it unless you look for it.
Mm.
You know, as soon as you sort of open your eyes to it, it's very obvious to see. But if we're only studying cisgendered white men, with
neurotypical
medicine,
men as well.
Yeah, neurotypical as well. Yeah. If you're only studying medicines or surgeries or all of these different things on one group of people, then we might be missing slight variations that happen to others, especially when we test things on men or cis men without testing them on cis women. You find that you have things like the thalidomide tragedy, which we spoke about previously. My point here is that science should be impartial, but the fact is that humans are not. We are all colored by bias, and the easiest way to get around that bias when it comes to science and have it remain at least as close to impartial as humans can be is by having a
diversifying science
out. And I think that's what we can really learn from this, other than eugenics bad, and maybe tell people you're testing on them when you're going to test on them. Those two things come first, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
But after that, I think that it should be a case of if you're going to be making a birth control pill, maybe include someone that might actually end up using the pill at some point.
Yeah.
Because just because you aren't going to directly benefit from the use of said product, that doesn't mean that you are impartial or unbiased on the topic. And I think that's one of the issues there, that they just kind of ignored these symptoms. And it's kind of accepted that if you're going to take the pill, you might have these symptoms. That's my kind of rant, my little aside there. But that is the story of eugenics and birth control.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. No, I think you forgot the story.
Unfortunate reaction there from Jen.
That's nice.
Do you guys have any final thoughts on that story? Anything you want to add?
Apart from eugenics bad.
Well, yes, obviously eugenics bad.
Well, the only thing I would add is that I also hope they, at some point, and there is increasing demand for it, create some kind of male contraceptive that we can take orally. That would be really good. That would be really cool.
No, don't be silly. There's a good reason they didn't do that.
Well,
no, there's a very good reason, and I'll give you the reason. It's because you can't trust men to do it.
No,
I'm not saying that. Yeah. That is literally the reason. I'm so glad you brought this up.
Yeah.
That's literally the reason that they gave, because men were too deviant and they couldn't be trusted.
Well, it was that ultimately men can't be trusted necessarily because they don't have to deal with the consequences of not having taken their pill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When women are more likely to take their pill, females are more likely to take their pill because they are ultimately the one who has to deal with the consequences of not having taken it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I don't like
unfortunate.
It.
Unfortunate. But again, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a male contraceptive pill.
Especially like within like couples, for example.
No,
that would be a great thing. Like obviously if you can get pregnant, you can't necessarily trust a random stranger you meet, but you could trust your partner or your husband or your wife or whatever.
Well, this is the thing. If you know for a fact that if they were to produce some kind of male contraceptive pill or treatment that's similar to all the ones that are available for females, that it would be absolutely perfect with no side effects, and you could get it free at any corner shop whenever you want it. You know that. They'd be selling it with like free with Tic Tacs. There you go. Like, bro, just have it.
But one in a box of Tic Tacs.
Because that's the thing.
Like Russian roulette.
But that's the thing. You know that, you just know that if it's being made for generally men, then they're probably going to put a little bit more care into making sure that it's as unobtrusive as possible.
Mm.
But I don't think it's unfair to say that that really wasn't the case for the pill. Mm. And if you disagree, please let us know in the comments. But I think the story's there, and it's pretty obvious. But that is all from us this week. Any closing words from you, Bliss?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah. Those are my final words. Thank you, Bliss. Thanks.
You, Luke, anything from you?
Eugenics bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, now he pipes up.
Well, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com. Sorry, I changed it up.
Perfectly fine. I am not Cardi everywhere.
I'm Jamkin everywhere.
I am Luke Cupforth everywhere.
I'm Bliss.
Don't follow her.
Bye.